This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. There are a few Malaysian artists whose works are in a Singapore exhibition titled After Utopia, Revisiting the Ideal in Asian Contemporary Art. Anu Jagadeva is one of them. Another is Chris Chong Chan Fui, who earlier in the year exhibited works in Penang under the rubric Botanic. Botanic was first exhibited in 2013 in the Singapore Biennale. His latest series, Endemic, was recently at the Palais de Tokyo as part of an exhibition titled Secret Archipelago. Welcome.
Hi, I'm very excited to be here at BFM.
Now, you are described as an artist whose works are often based on photography or moving image. Why aren't you called a filmmaker?
I think the terms of what tools you use are very important. When people are talking about artists or visual artists, whatever the term may be, you know, depending on what tools you use, whether it be a paintbrush, a pencil, or charcoal, all those things for me is the same thing as me using 35mm film, a camera, a digital camera, a film camera. I think that palette, your toolbox as an artist, has expanded. But people are just very protective of what they think an artist would be. So it's kind of like a new member of the family.
How do you think of yourself?
No, I consider myself an artist.
And so you're more than a filmmaker?
It's not more so of more so or not more so. I think my original intentions of working with film was always to kind of use it in a way that kind of helped me get through another door, present another opening to a discussion in some way.
When you took your first step into the world of art, was it through a camera? Or was it on something that's flat and you use your hand to create images?
Yeah, my start actually came from actually hand processing film, moving image film. You know how people, photographers, they kind of use before, you know, doodle times, you know, they use chemicals to process film, right?
Right.
Well, I did the same thing, but I used strips of moving film. And I used my hands to process it.
Help me understand, what do you mean you use your hand to process it?
Just like the way photographers use chemicals to process still images.
You use a film, you take pictures, and you put the film into a chemical to get the negatives.
Exactly. Okay.
So that's what you did with your hand-processed films.
With actually moving image strips of film. Years ago, you know, when we were watching film actually on film strips, on actual physical film strips.
Yeah, just Super 8.
Yeah, Super 8 or 8mm or even 35. You can actually process them and put them into chemicals, and that's how they become an image, right? So when I say hand process, I mean I'm actually using my hands to actually dip it in chemicals. So that's how I actually started learning. It really got me understanding, you know, this chemical highlights this, this reaction does this. If you shine light on it, onto a film, onto a photo negative, it's going to remove certain elements of the image. So I was able to experiment with light and the idea of what creates actually a moving image, essentially. You know, what makes this picture a picture? What makes this moving picture a moving picture? So that was my beginning.
In doing that, you were creating images which are not necessarily what you captured in the camera because you have processed it and done things to it. You are still creating images.
Yes. And the wonderful thing about it is because of the handmade nature of it, everything will become very random, meaning there'll be scratches and there'll be imperfections. So in the same way, I don't know, I'm not a painter, but I have a feeling that when you're a painter as well, how much of a control do you have over your medium, like with paintbrushes or water and oils and all this stuff? There must be a certain randomness in it when you start laying on top of each other. So that's something that I really appreciate, and I really like this randomness and these...
accidents that could happen.
Accidents that happen, and that needs to happen, accidents.
Based on that, then, you are not a documentary filmmaker.
What I try to do with my work is try to put two things together that may not necessarily make sense or provide a contrasting viewpoint in some way, and then see what happens when you put it together. It could involve film or moving images. It could involve photography. It could involve sculpture or painting. But as long as the idea somehow contrasts and presents something different, that's my goal.
Then tell me about Kolam. It was a film. You shot a pool and what the pool was being used for by some young children after the tsunami in Indonesia. So this pool was also something that was not completed, was supposed to be built by USAID. What is being juxtaposed? What is being forced together to create some kind of a tension for the viewer to say, okay, now what do we do with this?
The two things you're comparing here is the physical structure of the USAID water filtration tank. It's made to filter water, basically, for the village, right?
Oh, so it wasn't a swimming pool at all?
It was never a swimming pool at all. So you have this water filtration tank made by USAID, and then on the other hand, you have kids who are either orphaned or on their own or with other families and such who have used this physical structure for a different meaning altogether. They have used this pool in order to learn how to swim again or to have to get over their fear of swimming. So those, are, for me, are two juxtaposing kind of ideas or moments that happened that when you put it together, it was already there. I was really just presenting it in the way that it would be clear, that the message would be clear that two things put together, two opposing things put together, actually created a dialogue for something else.
You don't have a say, okay, look at this, and this is what I see?
No, I think you have to be careful with regards when you look into art and advertising, for instance. But, you know, it's very clear because advertising has a very clear purpose of it needs an immediate result or immediate response to something. But I don't believe that, you know, when you're creating an artwork or your art practice needs some sort of immediacy or needs some sort of, you know, look at me, you know, this is what I'm trying to say. You have to get it and you have to respond to it immediately and you have to get something from it, this result element. But I don't believe that it has to be that way.
But don't you think that how you see the world and how you create art must at some point intersect?
No, absolutely. I think for anyone, there's no way of expressing yourself without getting away from yourself. You can't get away from yourself. Even if you have two people who are of like minds, politically or socially, and they want to say they like this red color, they're going to say it in a different nuance, in a different way. You can't avoid it and bring in their personal baggage into it.
What are you bringing into your artwork? What vision or what worldview are you bringing to your artwork, whether overtly or covertly or unconsciously?
For my practice and the work I want to do, I like to look at how processes or how things are done. As simple as, you know, how you make food or the process of making food or how you build a building or how do you build a landscape or how do you put trees side by side. I think we, and I mean generally, we always want things to be done very quickly, and we have a bad habit of being too efficient, be too quick. We want to get to that point, get to that result, but we are actually not understanding the steps to getting that point. And I'm saying that across the board, not just art. I'm talking about city planning. I'm talking about commercial film. I'm talking about, you know, how we transmit our voices through radio. You know, are we understanding all the steps along the way? And because of the fact that we're very corporatized and we believe in this capitalist ideal, right, we have to get there fast, straight line. And that's the problem, because we already think we know the answer at the end. So we're already thinking that far ahead, but we never really walked along the way. And that's the problem, I think.
In what ways are you contemporary?
That's a very difficult question. I think I question that also, too, because I'm really quite new with regards to, you know, the visual arts or the fine arts or whatever you call it. It's a very hard question for me to answer. I think people have, like, datelines or when you're born or, you know, or the way you look at certain artworks. I really can't answer that. I don't. Sorry.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, in what ways are you Malaysian in your art? Is it very evident when someone says, this is Malaysian guy painting or this Malaysian guy is creating art?
I think it's hard for me to look at myself in that way. The questions of identity and like where you belong and, you know, what
is it in your subject matter?
It is inherently in there because, you know, I was born in Sabah. I studied overseas. I was living in Singapore for a few years. Then KL is really just 10 years old for me. So I've only been in KL for 10 years. So it's really in everywhere you go, you have to acknowledge your environment, right? So, yeah, right now, I guess it's – no, I don't think there is a Malaysian thought. I think that becomes a bit dangerous to think there is a Malaysian way of thinking about certain things.
No, because you talk about Americans, you think about the great American novel, and this art represents America. When they talk about the painting called Night Owl, is there a kind of sense of this is Malaysian art, and this is somehow captures beyond painting sawas and padis and people spinning gassing? And is there something that makes art in Malaysia, you know, somehow there's a thread that runs through all of them?
I still think we may try to define ourselves or the work that we're doing here in this one in this nation in some way, but I think it's hard because we're still kind of pushing, we're kind of seeing
we're
what
still
edges.
Discovering.
We're still discovering, we're trying to push the edges, but then we're told publicly, you know, we can't do certain things, we can do this and that, and how much can you hide away certain things. I don't think there really is a defined moment. You know, whether it be in other industries and other countries, it's really all about marketing and it's about the industry of defining what you do. And that in itself is a lost cause.
Chris Cheong, Chan Fui artist, his work Block B has been exhibited at the Singapore Art Museum. Coming up, we'll find out more about this particular exhibit, what it is, how it works, how it was created. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. You're tuned to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng speaking with visual artist Chris Cheong, Chan Fui, a Malaysian artist from Sabah. Bjorn's work's been exhibited recently in Tokyo and Lyon. He has a work titled Block B at the Singapore Art Museum under the exhibition titled After Utopia, Revisiting the Ideal in Asian Contemporary Art. If a curator were to ask you, were to write about you, what do you think they would write?
I have no idea. I think really I am just kind of, I'm not really sure how others...
You practice and you let them deal with it.
Yeah, I think it's, and I think that needs to be, I think when you get too self-reflexive of what you're doing, I think you lose track of, you know, some sort of natural or organic progression in some way. But I have no idea.
Okay, Block B. How did this idea come about?
Block B actually was shot in Palm Court, in Brickfields. And it was a compound, actually. So it's very much of a self-contained kind of physical structure, right? It's not just one side, but it's actually enclosed inside. In the middle, there's a swimming pool, etc. So I lived there for about 2-3 years.
You lived there?
Oh, I actually lived there, sorry. I lived there because it was quite central and everything, right? And I think it was about 2 years in from when I moved from KK to KL. So it was quite interesting, the fact that this compound is kind of this little community inside. And this was my view, basically, this static kind of modern monolithic building.
How was this created? You just stuck a camera and just let the camera run? Or?
Yeah, basically it was a one-day shoot from early morning to evening. So basically I would let the camera run for like 10 minutes. But the actors, the people that you see actually on screen, probably about 50 to 60% of the people on screen that you see along the walkways and such are actually people I've placed in there. But the thing is, there are also inhabitants running around as well. So I kind of mixed it in there. As well as the art design, the production design of the work, I collaborated with another fellow Sabahan artist, Yi Ilan, and we kind of wanted to look at the building as a moving painting, basically. You know, if I didn't move the camera, you know, can I actually create stories within this 13-floor building using lights or fabrics, colors, movements, and some dialogue to actually point certain narratives within the occupants of the building?
Do you make it clear to the viewing audience that this is, in a way, scripted? This part is not scripted?
No, I don't make it clear. I wanted to show a repetitive movements in some way, because I think the eye, you know, when it sees certain things in multiplicity, you know, you kind of notice trends in that way. You kind of notice, oh, there's a wave of people coming through. So I wanted to kind of help that hand, for instance, like at dusk, for instance, when people coming home from work. I wanted to add more people walking in just to give it that visual sense is a change of time and there's a movement in building.
What difference does it make to the audience not knowing what is scripted and what is something you just captured with your camera?
When I look at Block B, you can look at it as a multi-mixed media kind of work, like the way, you know, how some painters or illustrators, they kind of put in, for instance, newspaper clippings, or they put in another piece of like a sign from the street and they put it into their paintings and then they paint around it, for instance. So these kind of layers, it adds a different layer to the piece. So for me, I'm kind of adding the backdrop of an existing building with existing tenants, and then I'm applying my paint on top of it and then seeing what that would happen and what that would look like.
You have talked about your interest in processes.
Mm-hmm.
What process might be explored here?
Oh, the process was seeing whether a narrative or an emotional story can be told without moving that camera. Can I tell it by using people's motions through a building? Can I tell it without seeing people's faces of crying or emoting in some way with their faces? Can I do it from day to night? Most of these processes and everything for when you do a traditional kind of narrative film is that you have a close-up, you have a wide shot, you establish this place, you establish who they are. But what happens if I take all of that away? Can I still tell a story by, you know, sitting a camera in front of a building?
So in some sense then, you broke conventions with what's traditional filmmaking storytelling techniques?
Not necessarily breaking convention, but I just kind of pared it down. Just like when I learned about hand processing films, I learned about the basics of what is the purpose of light in a camera. You know, what is the purpose of this chemical and that chemical? I wanted to be very clear in understanding what is the purpose of having people move from left to right. Very simple. You know, what's the purpose of having a fabric drop from one floor to another? Very simple. What's the purpose of having red on this floor? So it actually isolated me and restricted me to the sense that, okay, if that's all I have to work with, then, you know, how can I tell something from this limitation? And that, I think, is a great challenge.
Now, you made this film in 2008, some 7 years have passed. How has this film been reinterpreted by yourself? Do you see the same things that you saw the first time when you made it? Or do you say, 7 years have passed, I'm seeing different things now?
Actually, I don't see much. I think I see it the way I see it then. So I'm sorry, I don't have an exciting answer from that.
This work is put under the exhibition, which has a very interesting title, After Utopia, Revisiting the Ideal in Asian Contemporary Art. How does this work fit under that title?
I can't speak for why the curators thought it was interesting. I think they mentioned something with regards to how the physical structures of certain kind of Southeast Asian countries, you know, were represented in artwork in some way. For me, when you look at the idea of utopia, dystopia, or the idea of looking at the ideal of something, well, the ideal is something that you just want something to happen in your future, right? And the residents in this building were predominantly people who were transplanted to KL, to in the middle of brick fields, to work in a professional job, contract job for 2-3 years. That was their ideal, you know. Malaysia can be considered as an ideal for many people who come and work here, right? You know, this is where, you know, I can actually make some money for my family and have a future for ourselves. So that is a utopia for people who do that. So I think in a sense, you know, you can look at it as this being a snippet, as the film being a snippet of, you know, what they do when they get here in some way, perhaps.
But the whole notion of utopia was not present in your mind when you first conceived of this film.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. It was really just, I really don't have a real emotional attachment to these things. I just see the emotions of certain parts, and then I just wanted to see what happens when you put it together.
Botanic is a work where you have to draw.
Correct. Actually, Botanic was where I actually hired a professional botanic illustrator that works for Kew Gardens in Sabah, who publishes with Kew Garden Books and stuff like that, publications. And I wanted to see what happens when you take a professional botanic illustrator who does beautiful plants of nature for species within Sabah, and then what happens if I make her draw something cheap and artificial, like a 2 ringgit flower, for instance, that you get, you know, any kind of market somewhere. So I wanted to see what would happen when we mix an organic process of some way and we mixed it together with a manufactured process. On a daily basis, that's what we do, right? We're organic beings who know, who have a feeling of what's right or wrong, but we constantly have to fight it and we constantly have to compromise every day. So I wanted to kind of make it much more clear.
So at the end of the day, who created the art? You got her to do the drawings?
I got her to do the drawing. I had no hand in it except for putting them together. So in a sense, it's a different sense because, you know, I don't work in a conventional way. In fact, I paint myself or I draw it myself. It's a different element. Just like with Block B, I never shot it myself. I hired about three, four people to do the whole thing. So it was just something I was used to work with.
At the end of the day, what you are exhibiting or what you're doing is the idea that you are providing to bring things together.
Absolutely. I think that's what the art creation is all about. There's a difference between that and someone who's an artisan as well, right? Someone who works with their hands to build, to sculpt and to paint and stuff.
This is a question I did not think to ask, but in the course of this conversation of how you explained the production of Botanic, some major artists with big names in America have this idea. They come up with the idea, they sketch it out, send the draft to India where they have lots of people to put the work together, then he signs it off. Mm-hmm. Who owns the art? Who owns the intellectual property? And I mean, at the end of the day, when is one just the factory worker and one the owner? As an artist, where does this thing lie for you?
Well, no, that's an interesting question. You know, what you would initially think, you know, the person who actually does the hiring of the work, for instance, you know, they're the ones who have copyright for it. But then, you know, it's a very interesting question, though. You can take it a step further, you know. Is it actually the people who are building it? Or are they just kind of pawns in a system of art creation, you know, is that all it is? So I don't know. It's an interesting question. Yeah, but you look at it as normally, you know, artists are people who produce work or do kind of work, and they normally work with others in order to get things done. Just like if you had a canvas, you know, you don't build your own canvas or you don't build your own frames. But you may mix your own paints, but the paints don't originally come from anywhere. You know, they're made, manufactured somewhere else. So it depends. Yeah.
I mean, at least I can see you got the artist to do this, the the botanical drawings, mm. and then you got this cheap replications. Mm. But you still have to put your hand into it by arranging whatever you needed to
yeah,
do.
At the same time, but it's kind of like it's an experiment. It's kind of like a it's not performative in any way, but it's I don't know how to. I think I'm explaining it incorrectly. But my hand is in the idea that I wanted to juxtapose between two different forms that were. Yeah.
I mean, your hand is in more than just saying, okay, let's put them side by side, but you have to do the arranging yourself, right?
Yeah, I think the initial idea comes from my point of view is like, what is my intent on doing this? I think that at the end of the day, that's what I wanted to get out of it. You know, my intention was to create a space where you're like, what happens when you put two opposing forces or two things that don't really work together? What happens when you put it together?
Your most recent one is Endemic.
Endemic was something that is being shown right now as we speak, and it's something very new. And basically, I wanted to look at the definition of endemic, which basically means, you know, a species that exists at a certain, its home is at a certain altitude or climate or temperature, etc. And it can pretty much only survive there. Now, you can go on to say that, you know, oh, but things mutate and evolve and they survive elsewhere. But I wanted to look at just the term endemic because I was hearing it a lot from conservationists and botanists and zoologists. And so I wanted to just look at the root of that definition itself. So what I did was I created 12 artificial orchids of Mount Kinabalu. And the creation of those, creating artificial kind of twins of these flowers, of these endemic flowers that cannot really move. The only way they can move somewhere else is if I create an artificial element of them and then transplant them or move them through via an art show, for instance, or an art exhibition.
When you said you create an artificial, is it...
It's a plastic artificial flower. So basically, I created 12 artificial flowers using a botanical illustration as well as a field photograph. A scientist who have taken a photograph out in the field, used that to match the color, and then I duplicated it. I kind of 3D printed it, and you can think of it that way. But I didn't. I sent it to I got a factory in Thailand to recreate these flowers in an artificial way.
Has this been shown in Malaysia?
No, it's really literally just finished like a few months ago, and it's right now showing in Palais de Tokyo in Paris right now. So it finishes in another month.
Are all your works shown locally? When I went to YouTube to look at your karaoke, somebody said, will it be shown here? Has it been shown here?
It has been shown here. It's just for limited showing. I think it's a different system when you look at it. It's hard to kind of get into those bigger cinemas and such.
Sure.
But it has shown here for sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, it's been fun talking to you.
Yes.
Real pleasure. So next time you have another exhibition, do let us know.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Chris Chong Chan Fui artist, his work Block B, a high-definition video with digital Dolby surround sound is being exhibited at the Singapore Art Museum. The exhibition will run until Sunday, October 18th. Museum hours are from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and until 9 p.m. on Fridays. Admission for Malaysians, $10 and $5 for senior citizens. But if you go on Fridays between 6 and 9 p.m., it's free. This is Front Row on a Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Hing, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.